here are free-range lamb and grass-fed beef.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Voice of the Cape Drive Time, welcome back to the show. 072-238-0712 is our WhatsApp number. Feel free to query, comment, and or criticize. During today's show, we've been trying to understand something of what's going on in Venezuela. And now, as this part of the show, we have a look at the South African position. And over the weekend, South Africa expressed concern at attempts to enact unconstitutional changes to the government of Venezuela. Media reports emerged at the weekend stating that several European powers have warned Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro that he must call elections within 8 days or they will officially recognize the opposition's claim of leadership. Yeah, it gets confusing. In a statement, South African Ambassador Jerry Machila said he was deeply concerned by what is a clear attempt in Venezuela to circumvent the country's constitutional legal mechanisms which govern its elections. Also, another question, why is South Africa silent on the Venezuelan crisis? A vote in the United Nations Security Council saw South Africa voting not to discuss the Venezuelan situation. Joining us online is Diego Sharifka, who has written about the Venezuelan situation on the Daily Maverick on their website. Diego is a 29-year-old Venezuelan pro-democracy activist and a former leader of the country's student movement. Sharifka co-founded the National Federation of High School Students and is the former president of the Federation of University Centers at the Central University of Venezuela, the most prominent student government with an important influence in the Venezuelan political arena. Since then, Sharifka has continued to advocate and protest for human rights and democratic principles in Venezuela. Until recently, he was a city council member in Caracas, being its vice president. Today, Diego Sharifka is a published author, an outspoken rights activist, and candidate for a master's degree at the George Washington University. Diego Sharifka, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Safiq, for that introduction, and thank you again for this space to be able to talk about what's happening in my country.
Yeah, I thought it was very, very important to try and give as much context as we could before we started chatting. But I think we have to first of all start off before we get to South Africa's approach or understanding. What exactly is the crisis in Venezuela right now? We know that the economy is tanking, but what is at the root of the Venezuelan problem?
Look, the fact is that unfortunately Venezuela is becoming the first or second failed state in Latin America. Most economists around the world have reached the conclusion that states that Venezuela is reaching that position of being a failed state. There's a crisis in basically every segment and every area of our economy. It's calculated that the inflation rate this year is going to reach 10,000,000% by the end of 2019. Around 3 million people have left Venezuela in the last 3 years, compared to a bit less than 2 million that have left Africa, the African continent, towards Europe, which shows the real suffering Venezuelans are living inside our borders. And in the last year, international organization related to the Catholic Church, which has an important social activity in Latin America called Caritas, has calculated that on average, a Venezuelan has lost around of 10 kilograms of weight due to a lack of food. So the truth is that all this started while President Hugo Chavez was president of my country. We lived a moment of high bonanza of the prices of oil, which gave the impression that the Venezuelan economy was very strong and very solid. But the truth is that we were extremely dependent on the prices of oil. As oil prices began to sink or to decrease, the Venezuelan government received less income due to exports. 90% of our income, of our government's income, is related to the export of oil, and that made that the crisis happen in Venezuela. So the truth is that even though the government has tried to say that the crisis is due to economic sanctions by some countries, the truth is that the social and political and especially economic crisis have been happening in my country for a long time.
So are you saying, in other words, that Venezuela has been the victim I suppose, of populist politics, that Chavez was a populist, but he certainly was no technocrat, and that he was basically ruling on a bubble.
No doubt about it, yes. Chavez was a person who no doubt had a lot of charisma, who was able to transmit ideas that created passion and create a very romantic image of a fight against the empire or a fight against colonialist nations around the world. The truth about it is that it was only words, because in reality, he destroyed the Venezuelan economy. A country that used to be one of the most advanced and economically stable countries in Latin America only 20 years ago, 25 years ago, since Chavez arrived to power in 1999, began a steady decrease and crumble of its economy. Chavez had a very strong position against private property. He took important actions towards closing down private companies in Venezuela, taking over most of the industry, and that eventually created this huge crisis that Venezuela is living right now.
Yes, it is interesting, pertinent to note that one of our previous analysts pointed out that in the 1980s, Venezuela was the best performing Latin country economy. It was thriving in the 1980s.
Yeah, and for example, and there are different, not only economic, but also social indicators that demonstrated the impact or the importance Venezuela played in the Latin American context. In the past, five of the top 20 universities were situated in Venezuela. Nowadays, the best university in Venezuela is situated around 250 in the Latin American ranking. That is because, due to other factors, because of the economic crisis and the need of entire of these 3 million people have fled the country, have been important professors and people that dedicated themselves to the academic world in Venezuela. During the 1980s, Venezuelan petroleum engineers were sent to different countries or traveled around the world, giving thoughts or giving ideas of how to strengthen economic and oil-based companies' strengths around the world. So yes, no doubt, unfortunately, Venezuela used to be an important reference in Latin America and the world of an advanced country that was working towards becoming one of the first world countries in South America. And unfortunately, populist demagogue government as Chavez and then Nicolas Maduro, who has become a real dictator, ended that Venezuelan dream.
So if we look at the situation in Venezuela, we have to ask ourselves, why did the people vote for Chavez in 1999 in the first place? Because you say that was the starting point of the decline. Why did they vote for him?
Well, the truth is that during the 1990s, Venezuela passed through a moment of where the Venezuelan people felt disrespect or disconnection between the main two political parties in Venezuela, Acción Democrática and COPEI. And they felt that those governments, which were basically a two-party system for many years, weren't really connected to the needs of the Venezuelan people. So we have to remember Chavez was a two-time coup failed leader who tried to take over the Venezuelan government through a military uprising, and he failed in two attempts. And then one of the last president before Chavez gave him set him free as a process he thought would bring an end to the violent use or the use of violence in Venezuelan politics. The truth is that Chavez was able, through his charisma, to make most Venezuelans feel that he represented a real change in our country and that he was going to be able to really take Venezuela towards a country without corruption, towards a more socially equal country. And the truth is that did not happen. Maduro does not have the charisma Chavez used to have, and that's why Maduro depends on having a strong stance and a strong military grip on power to be able to stay in power in Venezuela.
So are you saying in essence then that Chavez not only deceived the people of Venezuela, he deceived the people of the world? Because as you say, certainly a very charismatic leader. I can remember him going to the United Nations and saying after President Bush had spoken that he could smell sulfur in the building. And that statement certainly had a great resonance. So are you saying, in essence, that Chavez was essentially a political con artist? Let's be blunt.
Yes, unfortunately he was. And the truth is, especially, I know President Chavez at his time tried to create a very close relationship with many African countries. and had a close relationship with many of them. For example, with ex-president Mugabe in Zimbabwe, with President Gaddafi in Libya, with Saddam Hussein in Iraq, with Ahmadinejad in Iran. So he had a close relationship with many presidents, especially those presidents who maintained power in their countries through the use of violence and force, because in the end, demagogues, stay close to demagogues, and dictators stay close to dictators. So yes, Chavez did become a con artist in trying to impose his Bolivarian revolution around the world. And even though some people might feel attracted to the ideas and to the romantic ideas behind his revolution, the truth is that his ideas took a country directly into becoming one of the newest or recent failed state in South America. I have to tell you, because I have some friends who live in Cape Town, so I was well known about the situation in Cape Town regarding, for example, the lack or the crisis of water that you people, that you lived there. For example, while you didn't have a lack of water, or you could open your tap and have water 24 hours a day, Caracas, the capital of Venezuela, receives water only 2 times a week. That is because even though around $600 million were invested in the water system in Caracas, that money disappeared. And the truth is that due to a lack or due to corruption, Caracas receives water only 2 times a week. Similarly, there are electricity shortages around 2 or 3 times a week in Caracas, the capital of the country, due to corruption involved in the electric system around Venezuela. There are important cases of high-ranking military officials and people directly involved with the President Maduro that are involved in drug trafficking. For example, Nicolas Maduro's nephews are on trial here in the United States for trying to export or trying to bring in cocaine to the United States. So it shows that Venezuela is not only a failed state, but it also has a government which is very closely entangled with corruption, very closely entangled with drug trafficking, and with the trafficking of weapons, as happened to the FARC guerrilla forces in Colombia.
Interesting stuff indeed. Diego Sharifka is our special guest on the show, a Venezuelan pro-democracy activist and also a former leader of the country's student movement. We're going to cut away for 5:30 headlines, and after that we're going to come back to Diego Sharifka. Diego, stay online. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to Voice of the Cape Drive Time. 0722380712 is our WhatsApp number. Feel free to query, comment, and or criticize. Our special guest is Diego Sharifka, a pro-democracy activist from Venezuela, a former leader of the country's student movement, and currently studying for a master's degree at the George Washington University. He was also recently a city council member in Caracas, so he certainly knows the situation on the ground. Diego, welcome back to the show. I'm going to quickly go to a WhatsApp message that's come through here. And Diego, if you can respond to it. This person says, your phone guest does not mention the crippling sanctions against Venezuela by the oil-hungry Americans. What's your response to that?
So the truth is the sanctions began recently against not the Venezuelan people or the Venezuelan government. They're directly sanctions directly to individuals. For example, what does that mean? President Maduro can't have bank accounts or his assets in the United States were frozen by the Treasury Department in the United States. And the same happened with the Minister of Defense and other high-ranked officials in Venezuela. What is amazing about this, and I know South Africa recently passed through a crisis regarding to high-ranking officials involved with corruption. I'm not completely sure what were the amounts or what have been discovered as amounts involved in embezzling in South Africa. But one person did admit, one person who was a TV channel owner in Venezuela, very closely related to the government, he admitted to be part of a scheme that embezzled $1 billion, I repeat, $1 billion with high-ranking officials of Venezuela. So while there are people who are dying of hunger, while 3 million people have left the country, one single person admitted to being involved in an embezzling scheme of $1 billion. So that's the reality. So that's why the sanctions, not only by the United States, but also by Canada, Latin American countries, and some countries in the European Union, against individuals who are involved in corruptions and crimes against humanity in Venezuela, have been applied. The truth is, and South Africa also knows about this, and I have to admit I'm not a specialist on South African history, that without international pressures or international pressure, governments that use force and violence against its people are rarely changed. And that's what's happening in Venezuela. Recently, a city council member, also from Caracas, was detained after returning from a trip to New York to have some meetings at with members or representatives of other countries at the United Nations. Once he returned to Venezuela, he was imprisoned and thrown literally out of a window by the intelligence police in Venezuela. He was killed, literally thrown out of a window by the police in Venezuela. Another prominent member of parliament in Venezuela has been over a year detained or imprisoned in Venezuela, and he hasn't had a trial yet just because he's a member of the opposition. There are currently, in the last 10 days of protest, over 1,000 people detained in Venezuela just because they were on the streets protesting, over 20 people killed by police forces and the military. In 2017, 50 people were killed during 3 months of protests. Kids, people, young people from under or around 20 to 25 years old, they were killed in the Venezuelan streets just because they wanted a different country. Over 1,500 people were detained during those years, most of them still in jail just because they fought differently. So the truth is that without international pressure, without the support of international countries that do believe in democracy, that do believe in the possibility of people to just live a free life, there won't be change in Venezuela. Similar cases have happened in other countries, and international pressure was necessary so that could happen.
Another question is coming through on the WhatsApp line. I'm just responding to what listeners are asking. They are saying that the United States wants to overthrow the government of Venezuela. What is your response to that? The people accusing, being accused of interference in Venezuela's affairs.
Well, the truth is that not the United States, Canada, most of Latin American countries, and also part of the European Union, including Australia, also have had a position where they are urging the Venezuelan government to call free elections so that the people, Venezuelan people, can decide on the future of our country. The truth is that there were elections in May of 2018 where Maduro was reelected, but these elections were sham elections. The opposition did not participate in these elections because there weren't the conditions to be able to be part or to be able to participate. For example, members of the electoral court, who are those in charge by the government to organize the elections, are people who are militants of the political party of Nicolas Maduro. That demonstrates a clear interference of what should be an impartial court when they try to organize elections in Venezuela. More than 50 countries around the world did not recognize the results of the elections that occurred in May of last year, and that's why this January 23rd, the president of the National Assembly, as stated by the Venezuelan Constitution, assumed the executive branch in Venezuela. That's what our constitution states when there is a power vacuum in our country. And since then, Juan Guaido, the Venezuelan president, who has been recognized by most countries around the world, by over 80 countries around the world, has stated three important objectives. The first is the end of Maduro's usurp over power in Venezuela. The second is the establishment of a transitional government. And the third is the calling of free, independent elections in the next 30 days. It is important to note that all opposition parties in Venezuela are currently illegal, according to the government. More than 50 prominent members of the opposition and different opposition political parties are currently in prison because of their political beliefs and their political opinions, and this demonstrates a lack of democracy and a tyrannical and a strong dictatorship in Venezuela.
Are part of the conditions, Juan Guaido being in power, you say constitutionally, are part of the preconditions for the transitional government leading to an election in 30 days, the release of, as you say, 50 opposition politicians from prison, because you can't have a fair election if these people are still behind bars?
No doubt about that. And the truth is, and I have to recognize, even though Juan Guaido is the constitutional president now, according to what our constitution states and the recognition of over 80 countries around the world, Maduro does still maintain power in Venezuela due to the armed forces. So there is a country of two presidents, present at this moment, one which is the constitutional president, the second is Maduro, who is usurping power and the executive branch, and he does have still support of the military forces in Venezuela, which prevents granting total freedom to the political prisoners that are in our country.
How long do you think the military will stay with Maduro? Militaries like to gravitate towards centers of power. And if Maduro has no power in the streets of Caracas and other Venezuelan centers, how long do you think the military is going to stick by him?
That's a great question. And that's the question that most analysts are talking about when they talk about Venezuela. The truth is that, as I mentioned before, important sectors of the armed forces are involved in drug trafficking and other illegal activities, as is the mining of gold in environmentally protected areas in southern Venezuela and in the Amazon rainforest. This complicates the situation because they are involved in these type of activities and are also have committed crimes against humanity which do not prescribe as torture, which has been documented by organizations such as the Organization of American States here in Latin America. So that makes that most or important sectors of the armed forces are still related to Maduro or close to Maduro, because Maduro has permitted these type of activities by them. During the last weeks, over 200 members of the armed forces have been detained by intelligence forces in Venezuela, being accused of wanting to organize a coup against Maduro. And this basically brings us to the thought that eventually there's going to be a huge crack inside of the armed forces. I do believe, frankly, that this crack is going to be arriving in a short time, because the armed forces or the honest members of the armed forces are also affected by the huge humanitarian crisis that Venezuelans are living. But it's a matter of time. It's a matter of time, and unfortunately, there's no real answer to when that could happen.
And of course, just to recap, I mean, the situation in Venezuela, Caracas has now become the most violent capital worldwide. You've even surpassed Johannesburg, which has a terrible reputation as well. Yeah,
it doubles. And of course, which is amazing.
Yeah, and of course, you've got more than 3 million Venezuelans who've already left the country since 2014. That's 10%, more than 10% of the country's population. And I think the startling stats is that the average Venezuelan has lost 11 kilograms in weight due to there just not being enough food in the country. And those are stark statistics, aren't they?
Yeah, and what's important when you listen to those statistics, that behind each of those numbers are human beings. So when you, for example, listen to stories of doctors or lawyers or engineers who are currently working as waiters in Argentina and Colombia or in other parts where, because of the economic crisis and their need of escaping, Venezuela is really shocking. When you listen to stories of children dying of malnourishment in what used to be one of the most advanced economies in Latin America, there's something that is unbelievable and not understandable. Well, one sees, for example, the case of my family members, where I have to send my grandfather from the U.S. medicine for his tension because he can't find those medicines in the pharmacy every single day. It's something which is amazing. When you notice that 90% of cancer patients in Venezuela die because of a lack of cancer treatment, it's something that is unbelievable that would happen in a Latin American country and in the country with the largest proven reserves of oil in the world. So that's the truth about Venezuela. But the truth is that even though we are living the worst economic crisis in Latin America and one of the worst economic crises in the world, the government, or Nicolas Maduro, just wants to stay in power because he's obsessed with power. We have to remember, Venezuela is not in a civil war. Venezuela is not in a war with a neighboring country. And it has 10% inflation. South Africans know the story of Zimbabwe, obviously, as a neighboring country. They know the suffering Zimbabweans lived through under a dictator who just was obsessed with power. Venezuela is living a situation very similar, where one person and his friends, who are obsessed in controlling power and maintaining power in Venezuela, are making millions of people suffer due to their personal interests and economic interests.
Yeah, so sadly, the parallels between Zimbabwe and Venezuela, I think, are clearly there for absolutely all to see. Diego, what's the future? What are the solutions for Venezuela. Obviously, the situation can't be resolved overnight. But let's say, for argument's sake, there is a successful election, and after 30 days, somebody is elected democratically. Where does the country go from there? Because what we're also learning in South Africa, breaking down corruption — corruption is a cancer in any society. Yeah. Breaking down corruption is difficult. How does Venezuela get out of this?
It's a very interesting and very hard question to answer. The truth is that the problems, which Venezuelan problems, can be divided in different areas. There's an economic problem, which most economists believe can be solved in a period of between 5 and 7 years through international loans and international investment in Venezuela. Some economists from Harvard, who have been working on Harvard University here in the United States, who have been working on a plan to recoup Venezuela's economy, believe that between 5 to 7 years, Venezuela can return to a stable economy. But there are social problems which take a lot more time to be solved. Again, Caracas is the most dangerous capital in the world. 120 people are killed a month per 100,000 inhabitants, while in Johannesburg it's only 60, which is amazing that Caracas is two times more dangerous than Johannesburg, which is really amazing to hear. And that is something that's going to take a lot more time to solve. How do you solve issues related to insecurity? How do you solve issues related to the long-lasting effects of malnutrition in the youth in Venezuela? First, families have been divided, which is a social problem that's happening in Venezuela. Parents are leaving Venezuela to work in neighboring countries and are leaving their children with grandparents or close relatives. That has a social and an important mark on those children. So those are issues that are going to take time to be solved. Even though that, we are confident that with a change of government, at least we're going to start going towards the right direction. Right now, with Maduro trying to maintain power, the only thing is the country is becoming worse, and we are getting closer to becoming that failed state in South America. With a change of government, at least we're going to start working towards a better future for our people.
Indeed, and I think everybody says amen to that. But Diego, we can't finish the program without asking you to comment on what for us South Africans is a somewhat bizarre stand. 15 member countries of the Security Council held a special session to discuss recent events in Venezuela. 4 vote against this issue. One of them was South Africa. What is your take on this? Why would South Africa vote against the situation in Venezuela being discussed when it's so dire?
Well, mainly it's really sad to know that Ambassador Jerry Matila — I'm sorry if I didn't pronounce his last name correctly —
no problem,
decided to vote against even discussing the issue of Venezuela in the Security Council. That is something which is appalling, knowing how internationally it has been publicly known the dire situation Venezuelan people are living through in our country. Venezuela, President Chavez used to have a very close relationship with the ANC and with the government in South Africa. I think and I hope that South African government still has a very romantic view about what's happening in Venezuela. And I greatly ask that the South African government reconsider their position regarding my country. The truth is that Venezuelan people are suffering. And South Africa, which has an internationally known position of wanting and fighting for the respect of human dignity, can't be on the side of a bloody dictator who's murdering his people every single day. South Africa has to change its position regarding Venezuela. And I request that the South African people also ask their government to change their position. There might be great differences and disagreements regarding the role of the United States in international politics. There might even be debates regarding Europe and Canada and what their role should be about Venezuela. But South Africa wouldn't have been able to get free itself from the apartheid without international pressure. Venezuela won't be able to free itself from the dictatorship and the murderous dictatorship of Nicolas Maduro without international pressure. What we ask is the possibility for a real free election in my country where people can decide who is the president of Venezuela. We are not asking for an international intervention. We're not asking for the invasion of international forces in Venezuela. We're asking for international pressure so there can be free, independent elections with all political parties, all political leaders, and that the Venezuelan people decide our own future. Up to now, only 4 countries in the Security Council were against this idea, and unfortunately South Africa was one of them. If South Africa has to decide if they're going to be on the side of the Venezuelan people or on the side of a dictator who wants to kill his own population. And I think South African people at least know on which side they should be.
Diego Sharifka, a 29-year-old Venezuelan pro-democracy activist, former leader of the country's student movement. He co-founded the National Federation of High School Students, former city council member in Caracas, but currently studying in the U.S. Diego Sharifka, thanks for chatting to us, and our very best for the people of Venezuela. May the country again become prosperous and peaceful.
Amen. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.